Good morning. While preparing for this sermon on patience for today, I was delighted to spend some time reading through the letter of James. James is a short New Testament letter that nonetheless packs a real punch, focusing on significant themes like economic injustice, the temptations of wealth, the inseparability of faith and works, the dangers of an unbridled tongue, and the list goes on. Fortuitously, I also discovered this week that Herald Press recently published the last remaining New Testament volume in the Believer's Church commentary series, and guess what? It was on the letter of James. The commentary was written by Sheila Clausen-Weeb, who teaches New Testament at CMU, Canadian Mennonite University. And I had the pleasure of taking her course on Luke Acts during my time at CMU and really appreciated her as a teacher and a scholar. One of the unexpected blessings that Sheila notes she discovered while studying James was learning how important this letter has been in Anabaptist history. Sheila notes that this shouldn't really be surprising, given that James contains advice for practical discipleship, as well as many similar teachings to those found in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. She teaches a course called James and the Sermon on the Mount, in fact. Perhaps then, this little letter continues to have much to teach us Anabaptist Mennonites today. As I read through the letter of James, with our current worship series on cultivating healthy relationships in mind, the unexpected blessing that I discovered was learning how many of the virtues we've been talking about, mercy, gentleness, compassion, and today, patience, can be found in James's letter. This made me think that maybe our worship series should have been based on the whole letter of James instead of using a few verses from Colossians, but I digress. James is a letter packed full of pastoral advice for faithful, healthy relationships in the church and beyond. Looking for an exhortation to be gentle? How about James 3:13 and 17 to 18? Who is wise and understanding among you? Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness, born of wisdom. The wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. Whew. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace. What about humility? Does James have something to say about that? You bet. James 1:9 and 4:6 and 10 says, "Let the believer who is lowly boast about being raised up." Why? Because God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will exalt you. Looking for evidence that self-compassion and compassion towards others is an important part of healthy relationships? Look no further than James 5:11, where he exhorts his hearers to endure hard times by remembering God's compassion, saying, "We call blessed those who showed endurance. You have heard of the endurance of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful." I could go on, but you get the point. While we could spend time unpacking these verses and the virtues associated with them, the virtue under consideration today is patience. And so we do well to focus on what James has to say about it. No surprise here, James has a lot to say too. But before we jump into what he has to say, I have a fun little video to show us, and Charlotte and Theo especially will be interested in seeing this. The clip you're about to see comes from the Disney movie Zootopia, and it depicts Judy Hopps, a bunny police officer who has gone to the Department of Mammal Vehicles to track down a suspect's plate. She's a police officer. And a person at the desk that she encounters, shall we say, tests her patience. Have you ever felt like Judy Hopps? Have you ever had to wait for something or someone and felt desperately impatient in the process? In this clip, the thing that we see most that is happening with Judy is that she's experiencing a growing sense of frustration and a desire to speed the process along, even if it means interrupting and cutting off the person she's speaking with, whose priorities and approach to the situation differ markedly from hers. While the sloth is literally slow to speak, Judy, speedy rabbit that she is, can't help but let the words speed out of her mouth to get her desired result. We can probably all relate in one way or another to Judy's experience, even if experiences that test our patience vary widely within our lives. Impatience at the DMV is one thing, but what about impatience over much, much more significant matters in our lives? What about impatience with dysfunctional family dynamics that never seem to change? Or what about impatience with world leaders who can never seem to get their act together on policies that would make a difference in the lives of the poor and disadvantaged? What about impatience with a delay in receiving a health diagnosis or in receiving treatment? Or what about impatience with churches or church conferences that seem to talk and talk about visions of God's justice and shalom, but also seem to sometimes get stuck talking? What about impatience with global efforts to combat climate disasters and unsustainable global growth and development? What about? Suddenly, patience takes on a whole new gravity and indeed difficulty when considered in these terms, doesn't it? So then, what might it mean for James to exhort his readers, as we heard before, to be patient until the coming of the Lord, to strengthen their hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near? To answer this question, I thought it might be helpful to look at some of the key exhortations that James gives to his readers throughout the letter, and then ask how the virtue of patience, which James prizes highly, relates to those exhortations. While there are a number of exhortations that James gives in his letter, there are three noteworthy ones that we do well to pay attention to this morning as we consider the importance of cultivating patience for healthy relationships. So first, here's number one. James exhorts the church to speak faithfully with one another. To speak faithfully with one another. One of the more memorable words of advice that James gives in the letter comes in chapter 3 when he warns about the dangers of the tongue. Here's what he says. The tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. Whoa. Our speech, says James, is a great power and can be used to such glorious and such destructive ends. Among some of the destructive ends that come from speech, in chapter 4, James talks about how there are conflicts and disputes in the community that are fueled by care not being taken in how we speak to one another. Speech can cause conflict and division. So we might ask, how might we cultivate patience in our speech? I think we can hear James respond to this question in a couple of ways. First, be quick to listen and slow to speak. And second, don't grumble against one another. That's pretty practical advice, isn't it? It isn't hard to understand. We don't need to have a long theological debate about its meaning. It's plain and simple. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, and don't grumble against one another. What if we approached difficult conversations in church or really in any relationship this way, rather than steamrolling through conversations to get our hoped for result or grumbling against others in private? Cultivating patience in our speech means being slow to speak and quick to listen and being charitable with one another, even in our differences and even and perhaps especially in the words we choose to speak about each other to others. Easy to say, hard to do sometimes. Second, James exhorts us to, this is an interesting one, not trust in wealth, but to trust in God who is generous, the giver of gifts. Rereading James after having not read it for a while, I was surprised how much he said about wealth and its dangers. A little aside here, perhaps this is not too surprising, as Sheila Clausen-Weeb notes, she learned this from another author, that if you think about James, if he was indeed the brother of Jesus, sitting with Jesus at Mary's feet and having her teach them, the Mary who sang the Magnificat about the lowly being raised up and the rich and powerful being brought low, maybe the fact that he taught so much about wealth was not surprising. His advice is really such a basic, practical word again. Trust in God, not in the wealth of the world that gives you power over others. Regardless of whether this is easy to understand, again, it is hard to practice. Wealth has, after all, presented all manner of challenges for the church throughout history, all the way up to today. Remember, James says, God has chosen the poor in this world to be rich in faith and to be heirs of the kingdom that he has promised to those who love him. Remember, the rich will disappear like a flower in the field, for the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the field, its flower falls and its beauty perishes. It is the same way with the rich. In the midst of a busy life, or in the midst of their pursuits, is another translation, they will wither away. So, we might ask, how might we cultivate patience in our relationship to riches or wealth? How might we cultivate patience in a world where wealth is prized so highly? I take special note in the passage I just read of the word busy life, or amidst their pursuits, they wither away. How many pursuits, I wonder, do we prioritize for the sake of building wealth, but do so at the expense of our neighbors, especially the poor among us? The 9 verses that precede the verses that Lorna read this morning on patience for today speak of the dangers of the pursuit of wealth at the expense of others. And the danger, as James sees it, is that while wealth seems to shield the rich for now, it won't be so for long. And in the meantime, that shielding creates a divide between the rich and the poor that simply is not part of God's kingdom of sharing and generosity. At one point, James says starkly, "Come now, you rich people, weep and wail for the miseries that are coming to you. Your riches have rotted, your clothes are moth-eaten, your gold and silver have rusted, and their rust will be evidence against you. And it will eat your flesh like fire." Lovely, James. "You have laid up treasure for the last days. Listen, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts." Whoa. While we may not identify with the exploitative rich people that James calls out in this passage, James's warnings about wealth are no less significant for the church to hear in every age. Cultivating patience in the church might mean that we will have to forego busy pursuits directed towards wealth acquisition in order to demonstrate an ever-growing slow attention and patient care for the poor in a world that obsessively pursues ever new forms of treasure at the expense of the least of these. Third, James exhorts us to persevere in the many trials we face. Perseverance is similar to patience in that the one who perseveres trusts that God is near, at work, not abandoning the people whom God has called. And so James says, "My brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but joy." because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its full effect, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. In our limited human understanding, we might have all sorts of ideas about why God should act to change particular situations and do it yesterday. And indeed, it is right and good to cry out to God with these and lament and pray for God's transformation of the wrong in our lives and in the lives of people in our world. The problem arises when our impatience over what we see as a lack of change leads us to begin compromising the Jesus-shaped values that we are called to embody. We often do this so that we can steer the world the direction we want, trying to overcome our trials, even if it means bowling over others in the process, all the while still proclaiming Jesus as Lord. James describes this impatient response in two evocative images. First, being double-minded, saying one thing and doing another. Or, in the other image he uses, is it's like looking in a mirror and immediately upon leaving the mirror, forgetting what we look like, forgetting who we are as children of a patient, compassionate, and generous God. As Clausen Wiebe notes, the goal of James's letter is to prod the church to deeper faithfulness amidst the many trials we face, and patience is surely one of those virtues that, if cultivated, would allow for such faithfulness. Admittedly, patience is a hard virtue to cultivate, as Lorna pointed out, in a world obsessed with speed and results, and it is a hard virtue to cultivate in a world where so much is wrong, and it feels as if the right thing to do would be to recognize the urgency of many situations and take control to make change happen by whatever means necessary. James calls us to a different approach, however. Like the approach of the farmer that James mentions in our scripture, James notes that the farmer waits for the precious crop from the earth, being patient with it until it receives the early and late rains. Crucially, Clausen Wiebe points out that this waiting is not passive. Instead, while the farmer cannot control when the rain comes, nor can they force the grain to grow, they can and must create the best conditions for growth, tending the soil and the seed as best they can. So, we do have a role to play as we trust in the God who is and who is near and who is drawing near. We are to be patient, patient in our speech with one another, because God is patiently speaking into our lives, waiting for us to listen and respond. Patient as we trust in our generous God for our well-being, not in wealth, and patient in the many trials we face, trusting that the God who came among us to provide new life will provide for us in our need now. Talking about patience today has been important, but even more so is there need for us to practice patience. James would warn us, don't be double-minded. You can't just talk about patience, put it into practice. And so with that in mind, let's take one small step this morning in practicing patience right now. Here's what I'm going to invite you to do. Take a moment. If it helps, you can close your eyes and think about one area in your life that you are experiencing impatience in. Imagine that you're holding that experience in your hands with all its heaviness. And now I invite you, as you are able and comfortable, to offer that thought up to God and sing with me, and it'll be up on the screen, the song, In the Lord I'll Be Ever Thankful. And this will be our act of patient trust that God will provide for us. This will be our patience practice this morning. So let's sing together. And we'll just do it a cappella, and I'll try to get the right note to start.
In the Lord I'll be ever thankful. In the Lord I will rejoice. Look to God, do not be afraid. Lift up your voices, the Lord is near. Lift up your voices, the Lord is near. In the Lord I'll be ever thankful. In the Lord I will rejoice. Look to God, do not be afraid. Lift up your voices, the Lord is near. Lift up your voices, the Lord is near.
One more time.
In the Lord I'll be ever thankful. In the Lord I will rejoice. Look to God, do not be afraid. Lift up your voices, the Lord is near. Lift up your voices, the Lord is near.
May God strengthen all of our hearts as we wait patiently for God's healing rain to cleanse and nourish us for the path ahead. Amen.